Hello and welcome to EY's Fresh Perspectives podcast series. I'm Verity Pope and I'm part of the employer brand team at EY. I'm going to be your host throughout this series of episodes as we dive into our people's experiences working across our EY business areas. At EY, we're always innovating, moving with the changing times and striving to build a better working world. But how do we do that? Well, by bringing in new ideas, brand new talent and of course, fresh perspectives to our business. The world of work has changed so much over the last 18 months, and what we deliver to our clients has too. So this podcast series focuses on some of our key business areas and what they've been delivering recently. We're speaking directly with our people at the heart of their business, and we discuss things like the new model of hybrid working, what they do in their line of work to make an impact to our people, clients and society, and also about our continued culture of belonging at EY. We hope each episode leaves you wanting to find out more about our opportunities, and inspired to build your career at EY.
Our transactions diligence teams help our clients to meet their strategic goals, whether they are acquiring, divesting, or raising finance. The work is fast-paced, high-profile, and high-pressure. In today's episode, we're speaking with senior managers Timothy Chakrawinata and Simone Masterson on their roles and responsibilities working in transaction diligence and how they've used transferable skills to make a difference within their teams.
Hi Simone, hi Timothy. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Today's episode is all about transaction diligence, which sits in our strategy and transaction service lines. And just before we begin today's episode, if I could have just a bit about you, if you could let the listeners know all about you. Timothy, I'll come to you if that's okay.
Hi. I am an assistant director in the London transaction diligence team. I moved here last year from Australia, but also from EY in the same team. We moved here just before the pandemic hit, so clearly the last 2 years didn't really go as how we intended it to be, but it's been an exciting ride, so very happy to be here and very happy to be on this podcast as well.
Not quite as exciting as Timothy. So I'm Samira Masson. I'm based in the Manchester office. I've been with EY now for 4 years in the transaction diligence team, and prior to that, I worked in audit.
I might come back to that, Simone, actually, because that's really interesting to talk about your transferable skills and stuff. So we're talking about transaction diligence today, and I think what would be really good to know is just describing your day-to-day, what your role looks like, and why you've decided to work within transaction diligence. So if we can, chat a bit about that, that would be incredible. What is it exactly you do in transaction diligence?
Really, what our team does is that we assist clients on their transactions. We help them evaluate their investment decisions, give them confidence as to whether it is a good purchase, whether they should be selling their business now, what that means from a valuation point of view. If you kind of break that down further, what we do on a day-to-day basis is really understanding the risk areas and issues in the financials of a business and how that would kind of feed into the transaction. Have I done a well enough job summarizing what we do, Simone?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think the only thing I'll probably add to that is a lot of times people ask, oh, what's the difference between, you know, the M&A team and the transaction diligence team? I almost see it as an easy way to describe it. The M&A team is a bit like your estate agent. They're trying to sell you the house, but we're more like the surveyor. So we come in and tell you why you shouldn't buy the house, or, you know, yes, you should buy the house. There's nothing wrong. You know, that's an easy way of explaining it. And I think it's quite relatable if I'm ever telling anyone that's not in transaction diligence. Do you think that sums it up, Timothy?
I think so. I think that's a very, very good example, and I think it plays out quite well. The only part to add to that is we do in the wider SAT team, which I know isn't part of this conversation, but we do have the M&A team, we do have the strategy team as well, and it all kind of plays together, and that's a bit important because we have such a big focus now on working together with other teams. So when a deal comes around that our M&A team is working on, we can get involved a bit earlier, and then our strategy team comes in, kind of do more of the market side. Is there in the market? Is there growth for this business, et cetera, and then we come in and we, as Simone says, look at the business, make sure it's all good and it's what our client thinks it is. And then even after the scope of our work, then our integration team comes in and helps our clients integrate the business, kind of put it together with the existing business. So it's quite end-to-end, and while we don't do the end-to-end process, we are now very focused on making sure that EY participates in the entire process, so you do get a bit more involvement in that.
And then I think you touched on the fact that I really love the analogy of the fact that you kind of are surveyors. It sounds like you're doing a lot of risk. It sounds like you're doing a lot of analysis of the business for the clients. Can you tell me a bit about what your favorite part is about working in transaction diligence, and why is that your favorite part about working in transaction diligence?
Yeah, I think for me it's the variety, and if I compare it to when I was in audit, you typically would know how, you know, I could look for the next 6 months and I'd pretty much be able to tell you, you know, which clients I'd be working on for how long. Projects come in, sometimes you can come in and start immediately. So it's really good that there is so much flexibility, or, you know, you can ask to work on like certain projects or, you know, certain sectors. Because we are sector aligned, probably more so in London, not as much in the regions. But, you know, I've worked on a lot of TMT deals, for example. So it's quite easy to start building up your credentials in the areas that you like. But yeah, for me, I think it's just the exposure as well. You get to clients, you know, and you're talking to like the FC, it's the FD, a lot of the commercial team within the company as well. So I think it's just that variety that I really enjoy.
And is it financial director? Is that the FD?
Oh yeah, sorry, financial director. Yeah, it is a good mix. I think, you know, you'll be in a data book. So, you know, Excel, looking, analysing the business. Then you'd go into like a report mode, you'd start writing up in PowerPoint. But then alongside that, there's, you know, lots of client meetings, you're speaking with the advisors. There are just so many people that you get to talk to throughout the process on a daily basis. I think that's one of the highlights for me.
And Simone, you said that you worked in audit. How has that transition been for you now that you work in strategy and transactions?
Yeah, I think the best thing to take from audit, you get a really good understanding of a set of financial statements. So I think anyone that comes with a background in audit, you can rewrite a section, for example, which is quality financial information. And I think in order to write that section, you really need to, that's what audit brings. You understand how a set of financial statements have been pulled together. I think it's very hard to diligence a business without those underlying skill sets, you know, because when you're looking at figures, if you don't quite understand how it pulls together, I think it's quite hard to then diligence those figures. So there are differences, so like monthly trend, we wouldn't typically look at monthly trends in audit. It's all, you know, annual basis is what you, that's what the set of financial statements are. So it's different in that sense. We do a lot more, we focus on the management accounts, whereas in audit, you typically wouldn't look at the management accounts. It would maybe as part of some, maybe going concern review and things, more look at the budget and stuff, but it wouldn't be to the same extent. You probably look at the T being you're trying to agree, you know, audit the trial balance that then goes into the accounts. So it's just different information you look at, and we look a lot more of the commercial information, you know, that the sales and marketing might pull together on, you know, the numbers of opportunities, conversion rates, all really interesting stuff, which in audit, that's just, it's not relevant. You know, you wouldn't really look at that, and you don't look at the drivers of the business as such that we do in TD, in transaction diligence.
Great. And then Timothy, so you mentioned that you were originally from the EY Australia team. If you could talk a bit about that transition and what your work was like there and what it's like now and why it's such an exciting time to join the team in where you are now.
Yeah, so I made manager, I want to say, just before I left the Melbourne office. and then, you know, hitting a certain milestone in my career and hitting, I guess, a certain age in life, just wondering what I want to do next. And the opportunity arose to do a secondment. And it was actually quite quick to get that all done. The team was very supportive. Most of the people in the Melbourne team, ADs, directors, partners, all of them had worked overseas at some point in time, and most of them had worked overseas in EY as well. So when there was the opportunity, everyone was really supportive. I had a conversation with the London team here, who were also, you know, very supportive on diversity, getting people from other offices so that you can share knowledge, etc. So it was a great process, and you know, I've really enjoyed my last 2 years here. The team is different. That when I first moved here, I was a bit nervous, you know, having spent close to 4 years in the Melbourne team, having built relationships with people there. But what I found is that even though it was a bigger team here, people were supportive. We break down into smaller counseling families here in the London team. So although it's about 150 people, you regularly catch up with like groups of 20 something to 30, and you get to know these people here. So it's actually quite easy to build relationships here. People have started taking me under their wing, mentoring me, and it's been a great 2 years. You asked a question on why it's a good time to, join the London team. Now, the market right now is so busy that we are hiring a lot of people, but also there's a lot of opportunities. Just because, you know, everything gets pushed down, partners are busy doing certain things, then directors are busy doing certain things, and everything gets pushed down. So at any level, you have the opportunity to do more. You have the opportunity to go build relationships with some clients who are right now trying to find advisors to work for them, just because how busy the market is. So I would say it's a great time to join, because that's a lot of opportunity right now.
If you could just talk a bit about what your teams would do for a client. So what is your team like, and what is the ambition for transaction diligence now, next and beyond?
I think I have the benefit of having recently joined a conversation where we were a group of us was brought into a room, and we were presented a couple of slides and talked about where we are in the market, where we want to be. And I think the goal was to be in FY25. To be the leading transaction diligence provider in the market. So that is at a very top level what I think our team is trying to work towards. What in reality that means is obviously more partners, developing people internally, and obviously the internal progression as well. I think as an overall goal, that is the goal of transaction diligence. How that trickles down, I think we are seeing a lot more focus on people, a lot more support for people. And the other thing is we are rapidly increasing headcount.
Yeah, so it's probably as well the investment, and this is probably more EY as a whole as well. It is the investment in headcount, and there's also the investment in the tools that we use. So it is recognised, you know, there is admin that comes with our job. I don't want to bore you and go into it all, but, you know, there's a lot of, like, engagement setup, take on, but they recognize that this does take time, and it takes time away from we could be working, you know, charging our time out to clients. So there is a lot going on in the background as well to create. So we've got a tool which creates your engagement letter for you, you know, by it's like an Excel template. You fill in a few of the details, you click run, and all of a sudden you've got an engagement letter agreement. You know, obviously it's subject to a few tweaks, but it's all stuff which it does save you time, and especially like stuff Power BI, Alteryx, those sort of tools that we're using. There's a lot of investment to training us to making sure we can all use those tools, and it's helping us save this time. So I think that's just the wider point as well, that they are really trying to make sure that we're leading on those tools, and we're all aware how to use them and how it makes our life easier.
I think that's a really important point, because we are so busy and obviously working on clients all the time. You want to make sure that you're having those really interesting and engaging conversation with clients. How do you guys be trusted advisors to the clients? What is it that you do to reassure them when you're kind of doing these key engagements with them? How are you trusted advisors?
I think it's probably making the strength of the team, you know, making sure that people working on the projects have the relevant credentials. You know, we can loop in someone if we don't have the experience in a particular sector. We can probably, you know, there'll be a partner in London or another team that can help us with that. So I think it's really making sure we pull together all the experience we have to make sure we're delivering a team that is capable of doing the job and to a very good standard. I think as well it's just the way we operate. I think we always make sure there's a lot of, you know, check-ins with the client. We're not the sort of team that will take data, run with it for 3 weeks and give them a report without any communication in between. You know, I think it's those sort of, it might not be a daily update, but it's letting them know how we're progressing. These are what we're finding. Do they want us to take a different way? You know, do they want us to dig into this more? So I think it's really that ongoing communication and just making sure that we're not just, we've got to put the client first, even though we might think, oh, we'd like to go and do this analysis. But, you know, it's thinking, understanding what the client needs from us and where their focus areas are and really applying that.
I think as well with that, right, it is quality, but also consistency. You kind of become a trusted advisor to your client if you do a good job consistently. It takes time to build up the trust. But I think when you get an opportunity to work with a new client and you do a good job, but you need to keep doing the good job. And then over time, I think you build a relationship and that's how you become a trusted advisor.
Yeah, and I think it's small thing, just going back to the tools as well. There are ways we can have, so huge Excel spreadsheets when your client's trying to do pivot tables, for example, with them and your Excel keeps crashing, because we know that we've got the tools. So recently I was able to pull together a Power BI dashboard, and it probably took maybe a couple of hours, you know, to pull it together into these tables and graphs. But I think if the client's really struggling because they don't use Power BI, how do we work in this Excel document? You know, it's too big for us to be able to do any analysis. So it's really, you know, it is a small thing like that, but you don't realize how much it helps the client and it saves them so much time.
I guess the next thing I wanted to talk about, we've obviously got this podcast series which is called Fresh Perspectives. So it's all about fresh thinking, and the world that we're in at the moment is very different to the world that we had a couple of years ago. We now have hybrid working at EY, and I would love to hear your thoughts around how you engaged with clients before and how you're doing that now. How are you using hybrid working to connect, engage and build trust with your clients?
Yeah, I'll start with this one if you want, Timothy. So I'd say pre-pandemic, say if I was working on a sell-side engagement, we would probably spend most 5 days a week on site for the first few weeks. And it would only be when we get, to the report writing stage, we might go back into the office and then start writing up in the office rather than being on site. When the pandemic hit, obviously that all changed. Everything was done from home. All our client meetings, you know, were over Teams. And I think then post-pandemic, we're now in, well, are we post-pandemic? I'm not sure. all these new variants that keep coming out.
You never know.
So where we are now, it's a case of hybrid working. So I will typically spend 3 days, I would say, in the office, maybe 2 days at home. And it's one of those, I think you start to realise when you do need to travel and when you need to be on site and when you don't. So what I would say is meetings that are really good to be on site for, like a kickoff meeting, they can typically last, you know, it depends how big your agenda is. It might be a 2-3 hour meeting. For me, I don't think it's great to do that sat in my office at home. I think you're so much more engaged when you're in a boardroom with, you know, 10 of you, however many people there are, I just think it's a lot better. So I had one maybe a month or two ago, and it just felt so refreshing to be back in an in-person meeting. Whereas there were other meetings, which I now think we used to travel for, and, you know, sometimes it'd be going to London, like for me, from Manchester for a two-hour meeting, which now I don't know if we will go back to having those face-to-face. So, for example, a bidder meeting, I think, is the one I have in mind. We've done all of those during the pandemic via Teams, and I've not actually done one since in person. I don't know if you have, Timothy, but it does feel like one that can be kept on Teams, you know, I think, and it just doesn't disrupt your day as much then, you know, having to go travel various places, because then you lose all that time. So I think people have just been very sensible in making the decision, you know, do we need to be on site, do we not, what works for the team, and yeah, just thinking, how do we work efficiently, you know, and is this the most efficient use of our time by traveling to London for this? But sometimes a kickoff meeting in London would actually be really a good use of time, because you get a lot more out of it, you know, you build up a lot better rapport with the client, you know, sometimes by having those in-person conversations, or even pitches. Maybe I've not done a pitch in person yet since post-pandemic the hybrid world, but it'll be interesting to see what people's preference are with those. I think that's my sort of view on the whole hybrid and where we are at the minute.
It was a bit interesting at the start, right? Everyone kind of transitioned to working from home and people weren't comfortable. But then with a few months in, what you realize is there were certain advantages to it. There are, as I think, agree with Simone, there are cases where having that in-person meeting, a kickoff meeting, like those really big ones, it's good to be in person because you're more engaged, but also because it's easier to build that relationship. But now with Teams and technology, and what you realize is most clients either use Teams or Zoom, so it is very easily accessible to people. Everybody shows up in that meeting. Everybody shows up as a picture, video, mostly video, and you know who you're talking to. So I agree, we should keep some meetings face to face because those are important, but there are genuinely some benefits to working from home and using technology, which I have found over the last few months.
And then if we're thinking about fresh perspectives then, for anyone new that's coming in, let's talk a bit about like belonging at EY and how we're collaborating. For anyone new that's coming in, can you talk a bit about how your team are making everyone collaborate and feeling like they belong and part of the team?
The funny thing was, I remember as I moved from Melbourne to London, and COVID hit, of course, and then we were all working separately. And there was a bit of, well, do I really fit in? Because I haven't met a lot of these people, and we go on these calls, and, you know, the people who know each other are always talking to each other. A lot of people started calling me and just going, are you okay? Are you feeling like you fit in? How's your transition been? Things like that. And, you know, in hindsight now, being on the flip side of it, being someone who's been here a bit longer, and then being part of conversations of, we haven't seen person A for a while, is he okay? And then having to go call that person, I realized that there's actually that a lot that happens in the background. People care about, you know, new joiners especially, but genuinely, anyone on the team, people care. They like, if they notice that you've been absent for a bit, or no one's reached out to you for a bit, like, chances are somebody will give you a call just to make sure you're okay. So I think this team is really, really very supportive in that. And I go back to a point that I moved here recently in the pandemic, and I feel very welcome here. So I think as a general point, this team is a very inclusive one.
Yeah, and I think because we are growing as well, and the headcount numbers, you know, recently, lots of new joiners. What's good about that is, as well, we're now, it's not we get one new joiner every 6 months, you know, or every year, let's say, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, what do we need to, you know, it's fresh in our heads, you know, what they need to get up to speed with. We've got a really good onboarding program, you know, and we split it within our team so that each team member does a certain section. So that's a great way for you to instantly have a one-on-one conversation with each person in the team. And it's something meaningful, you know, it's not just a hi, it's we'll talk you through this, you know, you learn a bit about those people. Whereas I think I agree with what Timothy was saying, we had these calls, like the team catch-ups, and like you said, you'd end up with, there was no real agenda on ours, and it ended up being, it just felt like some people were speaking, but then others just weren't, and then you didn't really know, like you said, are they okay? So we moved it more to doing like catch-ups, smaller groups, you know, three people. And we've since now moved to, we have every Monday, every Friday, an email comes around saying, you know, what days you plan to be in the office. We can then see, you know, who's going to be in on certain days. And we have a Monday meeting first thing, and we just talk about what everyone's up to that week. Because I think that was what the hardest, no one really knew pre-pandemic what you were, when you're working from home, no one knew if you were on two projects, three projects, you had nothing, you know, you were, had lots of admin, no one knew. Whereas now it's quite good because people can flag when they're available, if things are coming to an end, you know, and resourcing wise in the team, if someone needs help on a pitch, they know, oh, I'm gonna have time from Wednesday onwards, great, you know, and you can, but yeah, I think it is really important that just making sure that everyone that does join the team does feel welcome, that people check in and they've got a plan, they know what the systems are, you know, and having the people around or who to go to, I think is really key.
And using their, I think using their fresh perspectives and new skills as well to come into the team and provide that almost reverse coaching, I think always really helps because they've got some fresh ideas to problems that we have for clients.
Yeah, and I think with that, our job here is to really make people comfortable that they can share those opinions, and I think that's what we're trying to work towards here, that you have a different way of thinking, it is fine, you don't have to conform. In fact, we would like to hear what you are thinking, I think, is our focus with new people, I think. Not just new people, people in general, but but more so the new starters.
And just to close then today, I think we've had such an amazing conversation, and it really shines a light on what you are doing in transaction diligence and how you're engaging with clients. But I guess thinking ahead then, COVID permitting, what is next for transaction diligence? What is next for you over the next 12 months?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm new in role, so I was a manager and I was promoted to assistant director in October. So for me, it's a big transition year. I think to, you know, really get up to speed on the role and what it entails, and making sure, you know, I'm performing at that level, which will take a bit of time, I think, over the next year. That'd be quite, you know, there's a learning curve there.
So I think our team's going through a bit of a phase right now, right? We are so busy, we're trying to expand. Then I think within that, there's one opportunity for the team, but also opportunity for us to kind of help the team advance. But the things personally that I'm trying to work on is one, upskilling the team. So just really focusing on people who started recently. This is what we do. We want you to make sure that you are upskilled. So what we're doing here in one of the London teams is we're running weekly sessions, and they're not long, but on very specific skill sets. And that's something I'm trying to get involved in to help help with this transitory period in our team where we are having a lot of new people and trying to make sure that, to your point, being trusted advisors by making sure we're getting consistent quality of work.
Great. And then I think what you were saying there about, you know, upskilling the new people that come in, I think for anyone that's thinking about joining the transaction diligence team, it sounds like it's a growing team. It sounds like there's so much opportunities, and that their skill set would be so encouraged in the team, which is great. Thank you so much for chatting with me today and for being on the podcast, this Fresh Perspectives podcast, and talking about transaction diligence. Before we go, I guess I have one question, just like a random question out there, but what one word would you use to describe working in transaction diligence?
I think for me, it's probably exciting. I know that's really...
No, it is. I'm just giving this face because that was literally what I wanted to say. I'm going to go with opportunity, which I think ties to Simone's point, because it is genuinely such an exciting time to join now, because there's so much opportunity to tie those two words together.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for chatting with me, Simone and Timothy.
No problem.
You too.
Thank you.
If you've been inspired by our conversation today and want to find out more about working in strategy and transactions at EY, head to our website at www.ey.com/UK/transactions. Thanks for listening and take care.